Welcome to Your Aged Care Compass podcast. Join us to find out how to support your older loved ones at home. We're going to help you make sense of Australia's aged care system. We talk about legal and financial considerations for aging and how chronic health conditions impact your older loved ones' well-being. And we share real life stories of where it went wrong for people and how we got them back on track.
Welcome to today's episode of the podcast. I'm Coral, your host, and I'm chatting with David Malloy and Leslie Bryce today. David is the General Manager of Communities at Trilogy Care, and Leslie is the founder and mentor for the Our Town Cares project. Today's discussion follows on from last week's chat with Trilogy Care co-founder James Whitelaw. We'll be talking about the innovative work that Trilogy Care supports in regional and rural communities across Australia. David, let's begin with you. So you're the General Manager of Communities at Trilogy Care. What does your job entail?
Thanks, Coral. It actually involves and entails a lot of different elements. I guess at its core, what I do is I help communities in regional and remote areas across the country to set up ecosystems in order that they can deliver aged care services in their local community. So what I actually do on a day-to-day basis is I go and visit different towns and communities, and they can be really quite small towns. This is a model that can work in towns with as few as 500 people living in them. And I try to identify a local champion. So somebody who has an interest in aged care, somebody who's passionate about their local community and wants to give back. Once I've found that person, I then work with them, and this can take weeks, months, sometimes years, to develop this model that we've got up and running now in about 20 different communities. And it's all about empowering the local community to coordinate aged care services, in-home aged care services in their local community. This is a model that really works and really sings in towns and communities that are just not viable for the big traditional aged care operators to operate in, whether that's a financial viability or anything else. So it's a model that really works for small towns and ensures that the local residents, local older residents, get the care that they need and deserve.
That's fantastic. So you work closely with Leslie, who was behind the first community model, establishing this in Bell, Queensland. How did that take shape?
Look, it's quite an interesting story, and I'll probably let Leslie give some of the detailed background around that, because there are a couple of funny elements to that story. But essentially, during COVID, Leslie was wanting to help her community. She was wanting to help the local older residents in the town of Bell, which is just about half an hour outside of Dalby. And through a series of events, she ended up speaking to James Whitelaw, our founder, and over time developed this model of what we call community aged care. And Leslie has been spectacularly successful in the town of Bell, and to the point where we now engage Leslie as the ambassador for the program itself. So Leslie travels with myself and James Whitelaw at times and visits different towns and communities across the country, spreading the word about this model. And in fact, we've now got a Trilogy Care camper van that Leslie and her husband, Paul, travel in from town to town. So literally, they will do a roadshow and they'll pull up in the main street of a town, put out the pull-up banner, and Leslie will stand there with brochures and just chat to people about in-home aged care options. So that works really well in terms of helping to spread the message about this model, because it's not a model that gets a lot of media coverage. As we know, as you and I both know, a lot of people are not even aware of the fact that the current home care package program even exists. So it's really helping to spread that awareness around the fact that there is a model there that can help. But obviously, over time, with Leslie and with some of the other communities, we have continued to refine and improve this community managed care model that we've developed. because it became apparent quite early on that the model that we initially used was to, which we didn't, Bell, was to help set up a small not-for-profit entity in the town, a standalone not-for-profit incorporated association. But of course, that brings with it all of the issues and all of the hassles of having to run a standalone not-for-profit entity. So over time, we have developed the model further just to sort of really ease that burden of the operational issues on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. So the model is now at a point where the local care coordinator can actually be employed by the Trilogy Care Foundation. And I can tell you a little bit more about the foundation as well. But takes away all of that hassle and allows them to just focus on the actual care coordination work and engaging with their community.
Amazing. So from a provider's perspective, were there any other challenges that you encountered in the early days of implementing this model?
Probably what I was just mentioning then about having the most effective model possible. So in the case of that model that we originally kicked off with in Bell, we would make payments to that not-for-profit entity in order that they could employ their own care coordinator and obviously cover all of their costs involved in operating on a day-to-day basis. But the administration element of that could be a little bit onerous at times. So that's where the Trilogy Care Foundation has come into play. And essentially what we've done is to really ease that burden. So the Trilogy Care Foundation now takes on the responsibility for all of the bookkeeping, employment of the care coordinator, laptops, mobile phones, rent, all of those expenses and administration tasks are now taken on by the Trilogy Care Foundation. So it really makes life much, much easier at a local level for the care coordinator to just focus on providing the best possible care coordination service. That's been the most significant shift in the model over the past sort of 3 or 4 years, is just making it better, essentially, and making it more effective.
Do all those 20 sites, have they all come under the foundation banner?
No, not at this stage. For those that we had initially set up under the existing model of a standalone incorporated association, most of those have continued on as they were. Some of them have transferred over. So now when I go into a new town or community, example would be Mallacoota in Victoria. The folks in Mallacoota that I was dealing with, they already had a couple of not-for-profit entities in town that were being underutilized. Right. So for them, it still made sense for that more traditional model that we used to run to be set up there. So we now continue to just make those payments to Mallacoota Cares, and they employ their care coordinator, and we don't get involved in that day-to-day administration for Mallacoota Cares. But somewhere like the town of Wandai in Queensland, Wandai Cares, it was a no-brainer for them. It just takes away the hassle by operating under the Trilogy Care Foundation, because they get all of the benefits of being a not-for-profit without the hassle of having to run a not-for-profit, if that makes sense. So we've got a bit of a mixture, but what we're tending to find now is that most of the new towns and communities that come on board do come under the foundation.
Mm. David, we'll cut to Leslie now, and we'll have a little bit of a discussion about Leslie, about her experience of when she moved to Bell and what this model looked like for her. And then we'll come back to you because I want to ask you more about the foundation. Leslie, your story is fascinating. You lived on the Sunshine Coast in southeast Queensland, and you and your husband were considering a tree change. You were trawling through the internet and you came across a bakery for sale in a little town called Bell. What happened next?
Well, I guess in true time sequence, I got in the car and I drove out here to have a look at it. Paul was on a motorbike trip with a couple of mates, and I just went into Dolby and bought it. Back in the day when I still had a big credit card, I put it on the credit card. And when Paul got home, I said, guess what we've got?
So that's a bakery really in Bell. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was he's a bricklayer by trade and a builder by profession. So I knew that the sandstone would not be beyond his renovating skills. But otherwise, we'd come back from a couple of years working in Fiji. I'd really struggled to settle in again in that urban environment. And we just wanted something where we could get away on weekends. But of course, the more we came to Bell, the less we wanted to go back to the coast. And then the change just gradually became, well, we just moved out here. So, yeah, we made
amazing
a complete turnaround lifestyle.
So where is Bell, Leslie, and how many people live in Bell?
So it's about, if you drew a straight line from Caboolture West, you'd pretty much run through Bell. So it's really almost a straight line from Brisbane out on the Warrego Highway to Dalby. And yeah, then you hang a right and it's about 40 kilometres up into the foothills of the Bunya Mountains. So it's about 3 hours drive, Brisbane, Gold Coast, Sunshine Coast.
Okay.
Yeah. And population of around 500.
Gee, that's small, isn't it?
Yeah. Just small. Yeah, yeah.
So you and your husband were driving backwards and forwards and then yep, Bell was looming as the new, your where you were going to settle and put down some new roots.
Yeah.
Then you became aware of the challenges that older people in the community were experiencing in getting the kind of support that they needed at home. What were those challenges that you became aware of?
Well, I think one person really I became friends with was there was a new Presbyterian minister and his wife moved to town just after we did. And so I became really friendly with her and she used to talk about, from a chaplaincy point of view, that she would say things like, there's so many old people hidden away behind gardens in this town. I'm really quite shocked. So I used to hear that from her. But then, of course, COVID came and my dad had passed away in 2018. So Mum was not coping very well down at Caloundra. So I just said, well, just come out here and we'll just make whatever this COVID thing is going to look like, we'll at least be together. So Mum came out and she kept saying to me, who's looking after these old people in Bell like you're looking after me? So Mum was very much, between Mum and Alison, my friend, who has since passed away, they were both very much challenging me, and especially from my mum, to do a bit more because Mum had a home care package. It was managed traditionally on the coast and I never really had much understanding of it except to occasionally she'd ring me and say, why is this on my account? And I'd go, well, I don't know, Mum. So yeah, it was very much for me, the elderly people in this town during COVID, they felt isolated, they felt lonely, and that 250K driving limit was on. They couldn't just get in the car and go wherever they liked. So we just started as a small group of three or four women. We started a buddy system and we'd phone people and check on them. And if they needed stuff picked up in town, we'd do shopping trips and just those kind of things. And then we started having little social gatherings at the local cafe in the, quite illegally, under the radar in the garden when we weren't supposed to be. But they loved it. They just really loved that social interaction. So when COVID sort of finished and we stopped cooking meals and delivering them, they said, well, what do we do now? Do we have to give all this up? So I guess then early in the piece, I started Googling other communities doing stuff like this. I couldn't find anything, but I came across a lady called Annette McNee, okay, who had been involved in the Navigator trial before COVID. And she just became a mentor for me and a fount of information. So I was very lucky to meet her early in the piece.
So interesting point you raised there about your mum having a traditionally managed home care package and then she moved out to this very small community of Bell with you and you're providing a lot of support to her. But I'm going to take a punt here and say that would have changed because the services that she had when she was living in Caloundra, I'm guessing they would not be able to be. We know that packages are transportable. Funding follows the person anywhere, but the actual services she was receiving from that provider, that would have changed because I'm guessing that provider wouldn't have had support workers or clinicians or tradespeople under their wing at that time. So what did that look like? Did that change significantly, Leslie?
Well, I think when Mum came out here, I was basically doing that stuff for her and I was looking after her. So I didn't really understand. But then she just, once COVID was over, she went back. She decided she'd come out here to live. So in that period of time, Annette McNee had come out and we'd had a community morning tea. So Annette could explain to people. But really, the whole thing hinged on me becoming representative for 50-odd people. Right. And you can imagine that I then had with the ACAT teams over that particular issue. But really, I didn't care. It was the only way was to have somebody who was able to speak for these people. So Annette came out. We had a morning tea. She stayed the weekend with us. She and I talked through the whole thing. And that morning, she explained to the people who came, I don't know how many came out, in a dozen or 20 or something, Leslie has agreed to become your representative and help you through this process. And seven of them put their hands up and said, well, I'm in. Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah.
So that's where it started, really. And then I started to understand self-management. And then we got to the point where we had the numbers of clients were rising and I knew that I was going to have to do something seriously about, oh, my God, how do we find a service provider? And Annette recommended that I talk to James Whitelaw.
Yep.
So that's how I came across Trilogy. I said to him, it was a bit weird. I'm ringing up hearing all these amazing things about you and your website sign is still saying under construction, which is like, oh, that's a bit weird. But anyway, I rang and spoke to Will and Will said, I'm going to put you on to James. And James just rang me back and said, I'm coming out to see you.
Amazing.
So, yeah. So I didn't know what I had. He did. So yeah. He was an incredible support through that process. And then it got sort of a bit tricky for me because Mum came to live with us in 21. She'd only been here a few months and she fell sick with metastatic lung cancer. So I think we're up to about 25 clients and I literally couldn't manage all of it. And our son and his wife decided they were going to move here after COVID. And so they did. And Danielle became our office manager. And really and truly, I just dumped the whole thing in her lap and had to attend to my mother.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
so how did the community respond to, because that was still early days of self-management.
Yeah.
How did the community, we've had previous conversations, so certainly aware of older people in Bell actually not having home care packages. And we've had conversations around perhaps why that was so. But that's a huge learning curve for a community to understand how the aged care system works and then how does this self-management model work? So
how's it going?
How did the community respond to that?
Well, I think we were really fortunate that James was very involved in the process. And as he explained how it should look from their point of view, from our service providers, and I started to understand more about it. And it was a great source of advice and information. And we also worked really closely with Mabel. So we had a community consultation. We had two. We had one in the evening, and this is very much based on how Mabel sees the process of building a workforce. So we had an evening consultation where we just invited everybody and we had 40-odd people come out for that, which was quite amazing. Mm-hmm. And then that was to really explain to the community and the potential workforce. And then the next morning we had another morning tea where we specifically wanted the seniors, the people who may have had packages or who were going to be our likely consumers. And we probably had similar numbers at that as well. So it was, the community really embraced it from day one. And I think that's the message I take to communities as I go, is that every community I visit says to me, oh, they'll never work here because you'll never get the workers. Nobody wants to work here or they're off doing FIFO work. I say to them, I can tell you categorically that this works in every community who says the same as you. So our workforce then, we advertised so our workforce comes from our school mums, older people who've moved here, like my husband, age 74, he's happy to be a driver, whatever needs be. So a lot of those older people who never thought they'd get to that age and be receiving an old age pension and still paying off a mortgage. So it gives people a little extra source of income. The farmers and farmers' wives are a huge part of our workforce because they are, every farm needs off-farm income in this country. That's pretty much across the board. So it's really nice because the wives can work within school hours, if it's harvesting or whatever they're doing with cattle or stuff, they can say, oh, I need 2 weeks off because we're harvesting. So it works really well for the farming families as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you've established the workforce within the community. But how does Bell source the clinicians that people might need within their home care package?
I think we've been really fortunate that we haven't had a lot of people with those high level of needs. Obviously, as we've grown, and certainly into Derby, we have a lot more of that. I think we have a couple of ENs on our books that we can call on. I think at the moment we don't have an RN. So what we've had to do is contract our nursing out to a nursing service in Kingaroy. And we always work really hard to make sure anything that involves miles, like our OTs, we work with an OT practice in Dalby and we say, we've got 4 or 5 or 6 people and they'll come out and do all the assessments in one day and split the travelling cost. And so we really advocate for our people, and the same with nursing. So we've got probably, in the 5 weeks I've been away, we've lost 6 of our people, which is just terrible.
So clients.
Our consumers, it's just a fact of the industry, unfortunately. So that's working okay for us. But if we had somebody in town, we could contract our nursing out to one of the traditional providers in Derby, but they are very unlikely to put our clients ahead of their own.
Yeah, of course.
When Mum was staying with me and towards the end of her life, we needed someone to come and shower. I had to contract that out to service provider in Derby, and they still could only come 3 days a week. Like they couldn't come 5 days, even though I was happy for Mum to have a shower every day as she'd been used to all her life. And it was really very expensive. I think back then Mum went in 22, I think it was something like $160 an hour plus mileage and time.
Wow.
So you know, that's the sort of thing that if we had an RN in town, we would be able to just use them. But our workers come and go. So
you just have to remain flexible and, I guess, resourceful.
Yeah, we're very resourceful. And the girls in the office are always kind of thinking workarounds. How do we get around this? How do we get around this? One of our clients has just rung this morning and said they're moving from Derby further west and she's having a bilateral knee replacement the week before she moves.
Oh, gosh.
And can we put services in place for when she moves into the new, even smaller town? Like that sort of stuff happens constantly. And we usually try and do what we can, but we're not going to be able to do anything for her out there because the town is too small. She'll just have to take whatever rehab she can manage. But
So,
we become very resourceful and always trying to make the best possible financial outcome for our consumers.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Leslie, you touched on it just briefly before. I want to explore this now. I'm aware of some of the challenges that you faced in having residents assessed or reassessed for package upgrades or to get a home care package. I'm a former ACAT assessor myself, so I can see this from both sides, but I'm particularly empathetic towards you because I understand what you have been doing in Bell. But can you please explain for our listeners, what were those challenges in getting people either assessed initially or reassessed for their package upgrades?
Community pharmacies keep Australia healthy. With 6,000 locations nationwide, they're open early, late, and longer for convenient, accessible, and safe care. Pharmacists provide home medicine reviews, dose administration aids, and essential vaccinations. Thanks to additional training, many can now treat common conditions like ear infections, wounds, and skin issues. They also support management of chronic conditions in partnership with your healthcare team. Ask your pharmacist how they can help you and your family stay well.
Well, I guess it was initial assessment was always the timing. And because I'm from within the community rather than from within the clinical community, like a hospital base or something, very often we'd have to involve our community health nurse, who was fantastic because she had obviously greater cred than we did. But there was no way around just the waiting. I think, I'm not even sure what it is now, but, you know, it was like 10 or 12 weeks from the request for an assessment to the assessment being done and then the waiting time. So we just used to encourage people to do it now. Like, don't, so many countries will say, oh no, when I need a bit of a hand, I'll let you know. It's like, then it's going to be too late.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was always an issue. But the reassessment thing, we used to be able to make, because I was representative, I used to be able to make that call. But now that we have to, the request has to come through our service provider, we have to now have less than $2,000 in accumulated credits.
Yes.
And then from what I can gather, the last time it's taking nearly 6 months then. So if at that point then you've used all their money in the bank, they still have the increased needs, whether it's they've lost their license or they've had a fall or they've had a stroke or something, they have the higher level of needs. But you have to go through and use all their money and then make the request and then wait 6 months for it to come through. That's just, that's ridiculous, because then we've got nowhere else to go, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've just got their monthly. And a lot of our people out here, Trilogy finds it quite astounding that out of nearly 100 clients, the national average for them is around 22%, I think, of level four packages.
Okay.
I wouldn't have thought it was that high, but we were having a meeting one day and James said, I can look it up and tell you. We've inherited a couple of level four packages who have passed away. We don't have level four packages.
Like, that's interesting.
It is really interesting that we don't, and I have always had a suspicion about it was to do with my relationship with the ACAT team. I've had ACAT assessors tell me that they can't put two home care packages into one home, which is absolute garbage.
No, that's right. It's on the individual's needs.
It's on the individual cases, yeah. So you'll get this one that sees that as a, well, I'm not going to assess this second person because I've had ACAT assessors tell me when I was in a very small town, well, we don't normally put home care packages in places like that. And I just said, why on earth not? Yeah. And she said, well, because there's no services. Mm-hmm. It's a waste of a package. Like, really? You just make up the rules as you go along. So I had a really very offensive phone call from the local delegate when I was up to about 25 clients accusing me of all sorts of stuff. But the next complaint that they made against me was when I phoned as representative for this gentleman who only received a level one package, and I followed the dispute process.
Yes.
That was terrible. Then it was an email then telling me how I was obviously coercing people. I was not being transparent. Wow. I must have been having financial gain for all of this. My daughter-in-law and I were building up a very successful company. Well, it's just awful. And it's like, but then I would have a phone call from another ACAT assessor saying, I just want to let you know that I'm leaving today. I want to tell you to keep fighting the good fight. You're doing an amazing job. Don't let, you know, like this complete. But in the end, I don't really care because I was doing nothing illegal. I was just really upsetting their sense of.
Well, being an advocate for the older people in your community, Leslie, and hooray for you. That should be applauded. It's interesting when you just made that comment about a successful business. For me, the success is that you've supported these older people to stay at home in their own community for as long as possible. Again, that should be championed.
Yes. That's what I think. I think we might have saved people. Maybe they only had to go into care for 6 months rather than 2 years. I mean, that's a saving for the government to start with. So I don't put the staff in that position anymore. And I know that the ACAT assessment scripts can change, and I've got no idea what it looks like into the future. But it happens repeatedly in communities that I go to where they have those same sort of things told them by their local ACAT teams. And yet other communities say, oh my God, the ACAT team in Cairns or Townsville or whatever is absolutely sensational. So yeah, it's very inconsistent what you're dealing with, which I find frustrating.
Absolutely. So the last, 3 months, 6 months, literally this year, everybody, the sector, we've been scrambling towards that July 1st date, yep, which now we can take a breath and have a little pause. That's going to be November the 1st. But from your perspective with self-management in Bell, how is your community? How are you going with the enormity of what support at home is bringing us?
Well, I guess we've been really reliant on, you know, Trilogy is our service provider. It's their job to get it right. And I know that they were as ready as they could have been. And I was speaking to them, to David and James, and they both said, oh, we were ready.
Yes.
This feels like a little delay now. But for our people, it's taken them a while to understand the grandfathering. So pretty much all of our people are grandfathered, which is a blessing, really. Mm. But I'm not sure how it's going to work. James has assured us that we are not going to be financially disadvantaged. So he's very committed to these communities. So yes. I don't really know how it's going to look. But my greatest concern really is that many people, when they start looking at the full pensioner contribution rate on non-clinical services, which mostly what all of our people have, I think people are just going to not opt in.
They'll decline services or they'll decline their home care packages.
Well, I think they'll decline. I think they'll, well, I don't know. It remains to be seen how long the whole thing's going to take. But I think people at this point are really quite scared of what it's going to cost them, as opposed to up until now, it's a full pensioner hasn't had to contribute. So I think it's that uncertainty of, well, we don't know what it's going to cost us really. And we say to them, well, at this stage, if you have a gardener and it's $100 for whatever work, for 2 hours work, it's going to cost you 17%. And they say, but what if I have then a cleaner and a gardener?
That's right.
That's right. It's,
and it all adds up. Yeah.
It's all going to add up. So, I mean, I really hope they look at that, but I'm just not sure that they will. I understand that this country can't keep giving everybody freebies, but I just think that is too, it's too, it's not fair on pensioners.
Yeah, I agree. They're all already very vulnerable. And I've mentioned it in previous episodes where my own mum was a teacher. She retired at 72, but she was of that demographic that didn't have superannuation. She had four kids and she was on a pension. She's on a level 4 home care package at home. And my sister and I were providing additional support, and we also engaged a private carer, and that was costing us a significant amount of money each week on top of her level 4 package. And that money wasn't finite. That was going to run out at this point in mid-2025. And we were very fortunate that we could do that. But if we hadn't, and Mum solely relied on her pension and her level 4 package, she would not have been able to stay at home.
No, that's
which
right.
Which is really, it's that for me, that it saddens me that some of our aged pensioners, particularly people who have grown up in these smaller communities, these rural communities, who just want to stay there and be with their friends the people that they know and love. Yeah.
And it's not a big ask. That's the thing, is that it's not a big ask. We know in this town that we've only got Coringal, which is at the high care level facility in Dalby, and we've got Ningana, which is more like assisted living. The waiting lists are unbelievable. In fact, at one stage last year, they had closed the waiting list because they were longer than the beds available. So as soon as you say to people, we could get you into Oakey, I don't want to go to Oakey. My family would have to drive to, like, you're straight away removing them from their community and putting them somewhere completely unknown where no one's going to visit. It just adds to all those fears of going into care. Mm. And I just think that
there has to be a better way.
There has to be a better way. And it's like, we found a better way. We found this better way. And every community improves on it. Like Jandowey is a little town 50 Ks away. The GP's running it out of his practice over there, which I think is incredible.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And you've got other communities who are running it through their Progress Association, and different communities are doing it to suit their community. The same template applies. But I just get really disappointed that we're not talking about babies and children and childcare and domestic violence, and we're talking about people at the end of their life.
Yeah.
Who've given and built, really built the whole country. And they don't want much. They just want to stay at home in their town. And we look after them. These communities look after them by doing that, because it's really terrible how many farming families have gone through the whole succession planning thing. Mum and dad live in the house, and then they can't get a pension because they're still tied into the assets. So it's farming families who live across the road from elderly parents who still never see them. We still put services in there day after day. And anyway, that's my little pet hobby horse.
So, Nesli, you travel around the country presenting to lots of community groups who are interested in this model, this community model, Our Town Cares model. How many other locations now deliver this kind of model?
Look, I'm not 100% sure, because some of them are for-profit, some of them are not-for-profits, some of them are under the Trilogy Care Foundation. I think it's about 30, though.
Amazing.
And probably double that number in various stages of we talk about it and I hear from them and then they get all enthused. So there's lots of communities who I talk to probably once or twice a year, still working towards it. And they come to it in their own time. They have to come to it in their own time, because I can't go in there cold and say, this is how you start this. It has to be community driven.
It absolutely does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if someone was listening in today and thought, I'd like to bring that model to my community, what do you suggest they do?
Well, they can either find the bellcares.com.au, the Bell Cares page, or I've got a little web page for the Our Town Cares. So they can either of those, they can send a contact form to me and we just start having conversations about it then. So I usually organise a Zoom meeting and I try and then get them to be a bit more focused on, they need a small group of three or four people who share the load of taking this on, because it's not easy. It's really hard.
No, it's a lot of work. Yeah.
It's an enormous amount of work. And so unfortunately, a lot of the calls that I get are from elderly people saying, I want this in my town. I've got a level three package or whatever. But we know now that they're not the right people to run the project, because it's all digitally based. They have to be work ready, really. Even I get left in the backwash of the changes now. So you can contact me at either of those places and just start a dialogue, basically, and then traveling different times. Every couple of months I do a road trip, and we promise people that once they're ready to be part of things, then, you know, I make a trip and come, or David and I make a trip, or whatever, whoever's available.
Excellent. Okay, David, back to you. David, tell us more about the foundation. I'm very interested in that, and I'm certain that our listeners would like to know more about that too.
Yeah, Coral, the Trilogy Care Foundation is something that I'm really, really passionate about and very excited to be involved in. So whilst we're quite small at the moment as a not-for-profit entity, but we've got big plans.
Mm.
At the moment, the focus is most definitely on helping new communities and new towns right across the country to get up and running with their own ecosystem to provide aged care coordination services in their town. But the scope for the Trilogy Care Foundation is quite broad. And this is really the opportunity for Trilogy Care to give back. So I like to say this is the living, breathing heart of Trilogy Care. It is an opportunity with the Trilogy Care Foundation to actually go quite big. So longer term, I'm certainly going to be developing a program around engaging with other people that have a connection to regional and remote areas, with the longer term goal of essentially engaging people to donate. Because this is all about ensuring that the Trilogy Care Foundation is around for the long term. So we have a financially viable model now, But in order to be able to do more in regional and remote communities, that takes money. And so the longer term goal is definitely to continue to expand the scope of what it is that we do to ensure that we can continue to ensure that these towns and communities, a lot of them, they can be forgotten. And we're talking about areas where generally no services are available at all. They might be lucky to have a monthly visit from a fly-in, fly-out nurse, if they're lucky. And so by engaging with the community and operating at a local level, that helps in terms of the longevity of the program. But it means that the local residents get the care that they need and deserve. Employment opportunities are created, and there's no small town that doesn't want that. And for the most part, the money that's generated through operating this program will also stay in the local area as well. Mm. So it really is a model where, for want of a better term, everyone wins. With this model, everyone truly does win. It's quite unique and quite remarkable from that point of view.
It's really impressive. And I'm sitting here just wanting to clap my hands and applaud you and James in Trilogy Care, because I live in regional Queensland and I go into these rural and remote locations as well. And I often feel helpless because, as you've just said, there's nothing there. And these little communities are often invisible because the people living in the communities don't know the kind of support that they can access. And if they can, then as we were discussing with Leslie, sometimes the system doesn't readily support the people who need that kind of support, as in a home care package, because there might not be the services in the community. So I think what Trilogy Care is doing is so important to ensure that older people can remain in their own homes in their own community for as long as possible. So fantastic work with this foundation.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate that. That actually means a lot to me. As I mentioned before, this is a model that I get particularly passionate about, and I could talk to you for hours about this. There are so many facets to it and different angles. And whilst a lot of the communities share many of the same issues, everyone's different as well. They all have their own particular idiosyncrasies or challenges that they need to overcome in order to fully develop and implement this model. And so that's what I do, work with each of the communities and adapt the model to fit the local town as much as possible. The goal is, as I mentioned before, that this is a very long-term, financially viable and sustainable model. So I want this program to outlive me.
Yes.
And just continue on. And there's really no reason why that can't be the case. I mean, obviously subject to any regulatory changes which may occur down the track, but we obviously can't predict that. There's no reason why this model just can't keep going and going. And I often flippantly say to people, I could do this job that I do for the next 100 years and probably still be going. When you think of every small community in every state right across the country that is crying out for something like this, yeah, I could do it for a long time.
You could, yes. Start working on that succession plan. Okay, so look, last week when I was speaking with James, he touched on another innovative project that Trilogy Care is working on, which is Ironbark Housing.
Yes.
How are you involved in the design and implementation of this exciting project?
So I'm the CEO of Ironbark Housing. Again, quite new, quite young, and quite small. That's how we're starting off, not dissimilar to the Trilogy Care Foundation. What we're doing currently, and because we are only in the early stages, we're just working on our first potential housing development right now in a small regional Queensland town. And what we're wanting to do is develop affordable housing. So one of the things that's become apparent to me and also to James Whitelaw over time is that quite often when we go to a new town and start talking to them about the fact that, okay, well, here's a model that can work in your town in order to provide those in-home aged care services. One of the questions that comes up again and again has always been around housing. So, okay, what does happen to Mary down the road when, you know, her 3 or 4 bedroom house that she needs to maintain, got a big yard, what happens to her once she reaches a point where that, even with assistance, just becomes a bit too much? Where can she go? We don't want Mary having to be, again, for want of a better term, shipped off to a residential aged care facility, which in many cases can be hours and hours drive away. And of course, at that point, Mary would be removed from all of her support networks. So no family, no friends. Nobody wants that. And the community managed model that we run is obviously designed to mitigate that. It's all about keeping people living in their own homes for longer rather than moving into residential aged care facilities. So we wanted to try to find almost a halfway point between, okay, the old house, big block of land, too much, but we don't want to go into a residential aged care facility. So what else could we do? How else can we step in and help? And that's where Ironbark Housing comes into play, because we're looking at developing not only the aged care model and the in-home aged care services, but providing an opportunity for the older residents in these towns to move into independent living units. So what we're actually doing in this small regional town in Queensland is looking to develop a piece of land that currently has an old disused church on it. It's big enough for us to be able to build some independent living units, affordable housing, and of course, affordable housing, the rents are set at a percentage of somebody's income. But what we're going to be able to do is also renovate the old church and the old administration building. So the administration building will be renovated and used for the offices where the care coordination services under the community managed model are going to be delivered from. And the church will be renovated and will be available for community use. So it's essentially going to become like a community hub. So yes, People will be able to drop in, have a cup of tea with the care coordinators that are coordinating their services. And of course, because there is that history attached to something like an old church building, there will still be people wanting to use those facilities there. So we're able to accommodate all of that. But of course, the focus for Ironbark Housing is on ensuring that there are safe, accessible, fit for purpose homes for people to live in when their older home that they've probably been living on for many years really just does become too much. Mm-hmm. So it's again quite a unique model, I think, that we've got here, where I can go to a new town or community and say, hey, look, we can help you with in-home aged care services for your older residents, but we can also help with helping to keep these people living in town for longer as well. So we, both of those elements together actually tell really quite a nice story. I think there's a natural linkage there between the two. But this is really all about the local residents, helping them as much as possible, helping to keep them living in their own homes and their own towns for as long as humanly possible.
It's incredible, David. Like, it's so visionary and so innovative, and it's super, super exciting.
It is.
And I can already predict that people listening to our discussion today are thinking, I want that in my town too. So not only are you going to have to create that succession plan, but you might want to get to work on cloning yourself a few times, because I think you're going to become even busier. It's just so impressive, and it just makes me so happy to hear that how the extent that Trilogy Care is going to support older people who haven't won the location lottery.
Yeah, that's right. And I mentioned earlier about the fact that both of these present an opportunity for Trilogy Care to be able to give back. Mm. And this truly is both of these programs. Yes, they work well together, but the end result is they present and deliver much better outcomes for Australians living in regional and remote areas. And at the end of the day, this is, as I mentioned before, this is all about ensuring that older residents in Australia, they've lived their lives, they've worked, they've paid their taxes, they've done all of that. Now's the time for them to be able to live a good quality of life. And if we can help to facilitate that, then all the better.
Hooray. Well done, Trilogy Care. David and Leslie, thank you both so much for joining me today. It really has been an inspiring conversation. Congratulations to you both for the amazing work that you're doing to support older people in regional and rural Australia to remain in their communities as they age.
Hey, Care Community. Thanks for listening to this episode. So you never miss a show, make sure you subscribe to our podcast. If you'd like to know more about what we do, head to our website, cmeacn.com.au.